First passage this morning is going to be Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7. Glad you're here. Certainly got many of our number need to be mindful of. I'm sorry that don't have Ricky's information in the bulletin. I just got the bulletin printed and sent off to Daniel so he could send it to the one still at home. And when I walked in the house after having all that done is when Carla told me about Ricky's upcoming surgery. Let's certainly be mindful of him. Shane mentioned his prayers about Brother Bowen. For over a year now, I mean, Charles has had off and on procedures done concerning his esophagus and his throat, and it hadn't brought him a lot of relief. Hasn't had a lot of success with those procedures. Helen said this past week they have found that there's some cancer cells, and they're going to do a PET scan this Friday. Certainly need to remember him and Lindy's upcoming surgery this week. We've certainly got some people that we're mindful of and concerned about. Let's not be negligent in thinking and praying for them. In Hebrews chapter 7, pick up with me in verse 11. This is one of the many instances in Hebrews where the Hebrew writer is showing how much superior, how much better it is under the law of Christ. In this particular section, he's talking about the priesthood. There's a better priesthood. But in order to do that, he teaches about the old priesthood. If perfection were found by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, if perfection was found there, what need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek and be called after the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. If the Levitical priesthood brought perfection, why would we need another one? That's the first point. The second point is, if there is a change in priesthood, well, that infers there's a change in law. Why would that have to be so? Verse 12, for the priesthood being changed, there is of necessity a change also of the law. For he whom these things are spoken pertains to another tribe, of which no man gave attendance at the altar. It is evident our Lord sprang out of Judah, a tribe in which Moses spoke nothing concerning priesthood. There's the Levitical priesthood. Now, if that brought perfection, we wouldn't have needed another one. But there is another one. Jesus Christ from the tribe of Judah. Now, wait a minute. If Christ is from the tribe of Judah and he's serving as a priest, he's not from Levi, and the old law said nothing about Judah being a priest, then there must have been a change. That's the point that he's making. But what I want us to do is give a little attention to the fact that Jesus was from Judah. Have you ever thought of that? With what you know about the sons of Jacob, if you were ranking them, who's going to get star billing in pretty much everybody in this room? Joseph. Have you ever wondered to yourself, when you look at just a character trait, it's just a good study for yourself, just go back and look at all the similarities Jesus has with Joseph. It can be said, and argued very strongly, there's not a more Christ-like person in Scripture than Joseph. But that is not where the promise came through. Those promises made in Genesis chapter 12, there's going to be a great land. I'm going to give you Abraham. I'm going to give you a great nation. And I'm going to bless your seed. And then there were all these sons, but that seed didn't go from Reuben the oldest. It didn't go from Simeon. It didn't go from Levi, the one in which the priesthood came from. It went to the fourth son, Judah. And he doesn't really compare very well to Joseph. Not that any of the others did either. But when we get introduced to Judah, and most of what we know about Judah, we don't see why he might be the one in which the seed was coming through. He doesn't stand out in his morals. There's a horrible story about him and Tamar. He was a part of the hatred of all those brothers that Joseph had. Let's go back. Let's do two things today. Let's go back into Genesis chapter 37. Let's remind ourselves in the first part of what happened, what we know about this brother. And then we'll come at the end and we'll make applications. But you know, there are some people who excel from the start. We might think of them as just natural. We say natural born athletes. Natural born musicians. There are people, you could just kind of plop them down in front of a keyboard and in 5 minutes they're banging things out. They're just those prodigies, we call them. There are people that are really, really good at stuff, really, really quick. Then there are others who have to work at it. They can become good. It takes effort. And it takes some training. And it takes some trial and error. And we praise those naturals. We also praise those who work hard. We praise those who improve. There's not a team I guess I've ever been a part of that didn't give out a most improved award. For those not natural born, they just worked and they sweated and they hurt. And they got every ounce of skill that they could get out. Let me just suggest as we go into this character study. We haven't done a character study in a while. And it might be that Judah has... I've never taught a character study on Judah. Taught a lot on Joseph, but not on Judah. But that's where the seed came from. So let's not overlook that. And let me just throw out in the beginning, Judah's one of those we might can call a most improved. No, he didn't start out very well at all. And it's because what he did to his younger brother Joseph. And it's because of what some of those things he did and with that event with Tamar. Those things are so bad. Maybe it blinds us to a pretty big reversal of thought. And what I'll do today is just kind of emphasize that. In Genesis 37, we're picking up in the middle of a well-known story. Joseph was without a doubt the favorite son. And we're familiar with that phrase. We still use that phrase. Well, Joseph was the favorite son, and it was very, very clear. It all traces back to the wives. Joseph's mother was Jacob's favorite wife, and she was barren for a long, long, long time. It wasn't until all the other sons were born that finally his favorite wife was able to have a child. And so Joseph is the favored one. And the brothers didn't have to guess it. He had been given a coat that shouted it. Everybody knew about how Joseph was the apple of the eye. And that led to a lot of resentment among the brothers. And it's not an exaggeration at all to say it led to a lot of hatred. And you remember what happened. They just decided to kill him. They are so mad at him. And Judah is a part of this. It wasn't the older brothers minus Judah. No, he's right in the middle of it all. And they decide to kill him. In verse 26, Judah speaks up. Verse 26 of Genesis 37. And Judah said to his brethren, "What profit is it to us if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he's our brother, he's our flesh." And his brother listened to him. You look at that last phrase there, he's our brother. And, Judah, he's a lot nicer than the other. No. The only way we can say he's any more merciful is if we think selling a brother off as a slave. Yeah, that is better than cold-blooded murder. But that's as far as we can go on that. He hates him just as much. In verse 26, what profit is it if we kill him and bury him? We can sell him. We can split the profits. Well, Judah is right in the middle of all this. He actually becomes the decision maker. The other brothers follow his lead. We'll sell him. We won't kill him. We'll just tell Daddy and pretend that he's dead. And that's exactly what they do. They sell him off. They take whatever that little profit was, and they didn't sell him for very much. Shows how intense their hatred was. Then they take that coat, covered in blood, show Joe, Dad, we don't know what happened, but look at all this blood. Wild animal must have got him. I'm so sorry. Look in verse 35. All of his sons and all of his daughters rose up to comfort him. Judah's a part of all that sons. He's in the all there. There he is, comforting his dad when he is the cause of the pain. He was a ringleader of the decision making that's caused the discomfort. Comforting the one he had a direct hand in discomforting. That's who Judah is. And this went on for 20 years. Between chapter 37 and 39 are 20 years basically. And of course you know the rest of the story. You know what happens, how Joseph is sold off into Egypt and he works his way up to second in command of the nation. God still blessing him. He sees visions. He interprets dreams. The famines are coming. Nobody knows it but Egypt, because nobody knew it but Joseph. And so they have stored up all of these goods. And now in the 7 years of famine, people from all over are coming to them to buy. They are like the world's market. Well, one of those who are in need is Jacob's family. So he sends the sons down. They don't know who Joseph is. He's speaking Egyptian. His head would have been bald. He's wearing the Egyptian garment. He's sitting there on the throne. For the life of them, they think he's a full-blown Egyptian. And they don't know who he is. Hadn't seen their brother since he would have been a young teen or so, whatever he would have been. Looks different. They are, now Joseph knows them. And he presses them, he puts them to the test, and basically he accuses them of being spies. You just don't need to see what we got. You're just scoping us out. Then you're going to go home, you're going to formulate your plan, you're going to come. And he ends up saying, if you really are who you say you are, you bring your youngest brother down. I want to see Benjamin, about to have been his only full-blooded brother with mother and father. Bring him down. You say there's another brother, go get him and bring him. So they have to go home. They have to sweet talk Jacob into letting the youngest son come, which is the new favorite son. Look in chapter 42. Was picking and choosing some of these reminders of this story. Go get your brother. Verse 20 of chapter 42. Bring your youngest brother to me, and then your words will be verified, and you won't die. Well, you're a bunch of spies. And the only way you're going to save your life, the only way you're going to prove differently is you go and you bring this younger brother you're talking about. I want to see him. And so off they go. They bring him back. And if you remember the story, Joseph just adds to the next part of the test. He now, as they leave, puts this cup in Benjamin's bag. And then has a guard go chase him down, find the bag, say, yeah, you stole. You're a thief. Bring him back. We're going to put him in prison. And he's still testing. Now think about what kind of test that is. Joseph knows that because he had been the favored son, they were willing to sell him out. They were glad for him to be left in Egypt, to be dead even. Well, now here's their opportunity, because Benjamin is now arrested in Egypt, and they can go home and they can make up another story to Daddy. You just wouldn't believe what happened. You wouldn't believe, oh, I'm sorry you lost another son, Dad. And that's what they could have done, and it's what would have happened 20 years before. So we push them to this test. What are they going to do with this younger brother? How are they going to respond? And again, it's interesting. It's not Reuben, the oldest, that begins to speak. It's Judah. Look in chapter 44. Benjamin is in jail. For all the brothers know, he's on death row. For all they know, the second in command thinks Benjamin is a full-blown thief and he's going to be killed. And then Judah steps up. Chapter 44, verse 20. We have a father. This is Judah talking to Joseph. They still don't know who he is yet. We have a father. He's an old man now. He had a child in his old age, our youngest. His brother is dead, talking about Joseph. His brother's dead. He alone is left of his mother. And his father loves him. Now, first of all, just pause. That's exactly why they hated Joseph's guts. It's because he was the son of a different mother. A favored mother. A more loved mother. Which made him the most loved son. And they hated him for it. And now it's that very thing that makes them so concerned about Benjamin. Our dad is old. And the brother that you've got arrested and that you've got in jail, that's the light of his eye. He loves him. Jump down to verse 30. Now therefore, when I come to my servant my father, and the lad is not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will come to pass that when he sees the lad's not with us, he will die. Your servant will bring down the gray hair of your servant, our father, and sorrow to the grave. He said, if you keep him here and we have to go home and tell him that we don't have him, he'll never survive it. He'll go to the grave in mourning. It will break his heart. It's a lot of difference in Judah between now and what we saw 20 years ago. He's behaving a lot differently toward Benjamin than he did against Judah. He's changing. He's a different man. Drop down to verse 33. How extensive is this change? Verse 33. Now therefore, I pray you, let your servant, now talking about himself, let your servant, let me abide instead of the lad as a bondman to my Lord. Let the lad go up with his brethren. For how shall I go to my father and the lad be not with me? Peradventure, I then see the pain that comes to my father. Talking to Joseph, second in command, sir, trade me for him. Please let him go. I'll take his place. I'll go to his prison cell. Whatever you are going to do to me, whatever you're going to do to him, let me take that on. I'll take his burden. I'll take his punishment. Joseph isn't the only one that's Christ-like, is it? Here's Judah for another saying, take me. Let me take his place. Let me take his punishment. We're familiar with the story. But when we just emphasize Judah in this event and in the chronology of this, it shows a big difference in a couple of decades. His character has changed. His heart has changed. His compassion has changed. He's a different man. And this change has been brought about by a greater love. A greater love that's being shown. A greater compassion of putting others before himself. And I hope maybe we can appreciate him. God, in his wisdom, chose the seed promise to come through this brother. It's nice to see what he turned himself into. Let's turn to the New Testament. Let's look at a couple of examples. A very, very easy outline, just a two-point outline. In looking at this character study of Judah, we want to emphasize the change that he made. We'll look at this change of heart. And what he did, finally, was he was able to put others in front of himself. Turn to Philippians chapter 2. And one of those that he put above himself was his dad. Earlier on, when we met him, he wasn't concerned about his dad's feelings. He had no compassion at all for those tears that Jacob was crying. Remember back in chapter 37, Jacob says, I will go to my grave in mourning. And it says, all the children comforting him. So hypocritical. Because they are the ones that cause that pain. And they don't care. 20 years have passed. They didn't come clean. They never finally just got with a pang of conscience that I got, Dad, I can't do another day of this. I can't watch you hurting. I've got to tell you. Judah didn't do it any more than any of the others did. And yet this, when Joseph puts him through this series of tests and through this series of hoops to jump through, he comes out differently. He's now got some compassion. He's now thinking about pain of others. He's now thinking about the heartbreak that his dad would feel. Look in chapter 2, Philippians chapter 2, verse 4. Look, every man, not on his own things. It's not about selfish desires. Look, not every man on his own selfish things, but every man on the things of others. We can go back and pinpoint, and we can just put our finger on verses where Judah's selfishness really apparent. The selfishness about the coat, the selfishness and the jealousy about Joseph's, about the hierarchy within the family, and the unfairness about how that love was shown. He's overcome all of that. Jacob's partiality was a sin. And he was raised with it. If you go back to Isaac, in chapter 25, it says that Isaac loved Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. He was raised in a house of partiality. And then he creates his own house of partiality. And Judah couldn't do a thing about that. And it took him a long time to realize this is something I can't control. It's hard to accept. It must have been hard to accept, but he does. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And I want us to read this. How many times have you read that long chapter, that long text about love? If you don't have love, you're just a loud trumpet making a racket. And the fact that other things, even faith and hope, you know, in heaven, you don't need faith or hope. That will disappear. Love endures. We've read that a lot, right? Start with me in verse 5 and read every bit of it thinking about Judah. Thinking about the scenario we just played out in our mind. The reminder of his household and what he grew up experiencing. Love, verse 5. It does not behave itself unseemly. To selling off your brother as a slave, pretending that he's dead for 2 decades. And does that sound a little bit unseemly to you? Love doesn't behave like that. Love seeks not her own. Was that not a lot of what was going on in the brothers' minds? Judah included. They're tired of what Joseph's got. What am I going to get? When's it become my turn, Dad? Love is not easily provoked. And there's no telling how long they hated Joseph. But when he started talking about those dreams, when he started talking about stars bowing and this bowing and he's inferring that that's talking about the brothers, here's the dream, and it's talking about you. You're going to bow to me one day. Well, did that provoke? Love thinks no evil. I hope there's none of us in this room who can even conceive of the evil that it would take to put a plan into effect that would kill your brother, flesh and blood brother. And then when that was finally reasoned away, option B was sell him as a slave. Verse 6, love rejoices not in unrighteousness, but it rejoices in truth. 20 years of lying to daddy. 20 years of him not even having a grave to go to, but yet just dead inside. Lying for those decades. Here's what Judah was not. You look at that, and the whole scenario of what happened with Joseph can be applied to that. How unloving that it was. How such full of hatred that it was. And finally, he's able to put the father's emotions in. Master, please, don't do this. Don't keep him. It will kill my dad. It will break his heart. It'll put him in the ground. He won't survive this. He had a chance to get rid of another favorite son, but he's a different man. Now he does love. Now he's not looking for evil. Now he's not looking for unrighteousness. Now he is taking others into consideration. It's not all about his own anymore. He's better. We can strive to be better. He didn't just put Jacob above himself. He puts Benjamin above himself. Look in John chapter 15. He effectively, and it's not a bit of an exaggeration to say, he was offering his life for Benjamin's. Please let me take his place. If a crime has been committed, if there was a cup stolen, if the penalty for that crime is death, then let me have it. Let him go. Let him go home, and I'll take the pain. I'll take the hurt. John chapter 15, verse 13. Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Now Judah did not have to do that, but he was willing to do it. Judah did have to do it because that was the final test. When Joseph saw how they behaved, when he has seen the difference that how they are treating Benjamin as opposed to how they have treated, how they treated him, this is when he clears the room. He gets everybody out except him and the brothers, and he lets them know who he is. That's when he reveals himself. But Judah was ready to die that day. Look at the change. He's gone from the heart of a murderer, because there was that small window when they were all ready to kill Joseph. He had this murderer's heart. And then 20 years later, when we get to the end of it, he's got this self-sacrificing heart. Not only ready to kill, but now he's ready to be killed on behalf of another. What a change. Puts Jacob above himself. Puts Benjamin above himself. And I'm not trying to, some ridiculous thing. I know Joseph will always be the one we compare Christ to. I know when we look back to the latter chapters of Joseph, or of Genesis rather, Joseph is he's the star of that somewhat. He's the one the story revolves through there. But there's some wonderful things about Judah. Through whom the seed is coming, through whom David came, through whom ultimately Christ came, that we can't appreciate. What an incredible change that he makes. Look at Colossians chapter 3. All of this change is what led to that happy ending, that family reunion. And we need to be making sure we understand the same thing is expected of us. For our story to end well, there are things we've got to have. There are character traits we need. Look in chapter 3, verse 12. Put on as the elect of God, holy and beloved, a heart of compassion. Read that, thinking about the story of Judah, the change he made. A heart of compassion. Kindness. Finally, Judah can be called a kind man. Humbleness of mind. Meekness. Long-suffering. Forbearing one another, forgiving one another. As any man has a quarrel against you, even as Christ has forgiven you. And above all these things, put on love, the bond of perfectness. We've got to make changes too. These have to be our character traits. And now here's the beauty of it. Go back to Luke 15. Some people are natural. We're not disparaging Judas' character to say he was not a natural. No, he wasn't a natural at all. But if this was a ball team, he very well may have just won the most improved award. He's not who he was. He's not what he was. He doesn't think like he did. He doesn't hold grudges like he did. He doesn't hate like he did. He's opened up his heart. And heaven is ecstatic about people like that. Look in Luke chapter 15, verse 10. That long section of parables about lost and found. In verse 10, likewise I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repents. You and I, like Judah, might not be what we ought to be. We might not be as compassionate. We might not be as loving. We might not be as forbearing. We might not be willing to put others above ourselves and worry about them. But we can be that kind of person. Judah became that kind of person. Get your psalm books out. Luke 15 called it repenting. It's a change. But it's not a change for the worse. It's a change for the better. It's a change for, it's a sign of improvement. And hopefully we're improving every day. And as we do, as we repent, heaven rejoicing every single time. Now Luke chapter 15 was full of lost this and lost that. And in our own private lives, the changes we have to make, the repenting that we do, even on a daily basis, those verses still apply. Heaven rejoicing over that decision and over that change of life. Improving is what we see with Judah. And that's what we need to be busy doing. If there's any here who we can help you before we go any farther into our time together, do it while we stand and sing.